Folks, welcome to a very special edition of American Warrior Radio. As you know, December 7th, a date which will live in infamy, the 73rd anniversary of the attack on Pearl Harbor. We're very, very pleased to be joined today by a survivor, a gentleman who was there, a 20-year-old Georgia farm boy at the time, Mr. Durward Swanson, one of the few remaining Pearl Harbor survivors. Mr. Swanson, welcome to American Warrior Radio.
Thank you.
Now, you're over in Honolulu now. You're there to participate in the commemoration, sir?
Yes, sir. They come for you, right.
And how many times have you been back?
Well, this is the fourth straight year I've come back. I was back in 2010, and I was back in 2011, which they have a Waikiki Holiday Parade year, day of Thanksgiving. I was the Grand Marshal of that. Then in 2012, I come back. I was at the guest honor at the 65th birthday of the Air Force.
Okay.
And then last year we come back and we had a General North was here and they presented us with a flag and stuff, like a ceremony we had last year. So this year we're having the ceremony again here. December the 7th.
Well, and I want to tell folks a little bit about that flag because that's a real special story. But, Mr. Swanson, let's back up a little bit. What on earth convinced an 18-year-old Georgia farm boy to join the Army Air Corps in 1939?
That's a long story, but I'll tell you part of it.
Okay.
I got mad at my school sweetheart. I finished high school in 39. She was going to finish in 40 and we was going to get married. And I got mad at a prom party one night. The next morning, I went up and signed up for the Army Air Corps in Hawaii.
Well, I'm guessing that happened more often than not, sir.
Yes.
Now, what?
But 20 years later, we got married. We had 41 wonderful years together.
Oh, wonderful. What a great story. What a great story. Now, what were your thoughts going from Georgia to Hawaii? What were your thoughts upon first arriving in Honolulu? A little bit of a different perspective there?
It was, but when I first got here, the servicemen wasn't thought too much of here because they had signs on the windows in the cafes downtown, coffee 5 cents a cup, servicemen 25 cents a cup.
Wow.
But that changed just before the war started. That changed a lot.
So when did you start to get a sense of it? Now, were you there for the whole time from 1939 to 1941?
I was there from, I got hurt in the Midway battle June the 5th, 1942.
Okay.
And I didn't leave Hawaii here till December of 1943 and went back to the States and then done 2 years there, and then I was discharged.
Okay. Now, you joined the Army Air Corps, but as I can tell from your story, sir, you were actually on that fateful day on December 7th, you were serving as a security policeman. How?
I was. I was in charge of the air police. I had 8 motorcycle riders under me, and I was a security. We patrolled the field. I had just come off duty. Me and Harry Albright, we rode in pairs. Mm-hmm. I was over the air police.
So set the scene for us, if you would, Durward. You're a patrolman. It's early morning on December 7th. You were just coming off a shift, were you not?
All right. We worked 12 hours on, 12 hours off, 12 hours on, and 24 hours off. And we always rode in pairs.
Okay. And what you just had finished your shift, and you went in to get some chow and then back to your barracks and pick up the story from there, if you wouldn't mind.
All right, I had just come out of the mess hall and laid down across the bunk. I'd only had about 3 weeks to do for it. I was going back to the States to get my discharge, take a 30-day furlough, re-enlist, and come back to Hawaii. And I was laying down across my bunk. I wasn't asleep. I'd take my shoes and shirt off. I still had my pants on. Harry Albright come running through, said, "Sarge, Sarge, get up." To the depths of bombing the hell out of us. My bunk was in the corner of the top of the building, and I had the window on each side, so I turned over, and as I turned over, I seen this plane bank, and I seen the rising sun on the wing. I knew what he was saying was true.
So you had a brief moment, sir, where you thought maybe he was pulling your leg, but that didn't last very long, huh?
No, sir, it sure didn't.
Now, a lot of interesting parts of your story, sir, one of which is, you've already related, you had just come from the chow hall, and during that first, was it during the first wave or soon thereafter, did a bomb struck right where you had been just a few minutes earlier, didn't it?
During the first wave, a bomb struck. As 43 men was killed in the Aiden Breakfast.
Where you had just been. Wow.
I escaped death there by 10 minutes.
Wow. Now what, so you get up, you got your pants on, you did you have a weapon, sir? Did you grab your weapon? Or?
Yeah, I put my shirt on, put my shoes on, went down to the center. Our gun was in a rack down in the bottom of the guardhouse. I strapped my 45 on, got on a motorcycle, and Sergeant Kramer, the commander guard, had always said, we had kind of suspected we might be hit with the Japanese. He said, if it happens, Swanson, all the guards and all their police, I want them at the main gate. Then we will secure the perimeter if they can feel it with guards all around it.
So your group already had a muster plan in case of attack, so there wasn't any confusion
right there? No, sir.
Okay, and tell us what happened next. I think you'd said that you were trying to find all your airmen, all your security personnel, but there was a guy missing, and someone said they spotted him up at a baseball field or a softball field?
That was a guy that we met right after we got over. Both of us come over on the same boat, and we slept in a two-man tent together, so we got the barracks all built. He was just like a brother to me. We were just like brothers. And I asked some of them, I said, where's Lloyd? And Burris, one of my patrolmen, said, last time I seen you, you're standing out in the ball field with a BAR, cussing the Jap, shooting at him. I think he's going to get himself killed. So I jumped on my motorcycle, went back up to get him. And there he was. And in the meantime, he got on the motorcycle. And as we started to leave, we heard people, voices coming from the guardhouse. So I went inside the guard, and I called Officer Dave, which was Lieutenant Ritchie. He got killed that day. I said, Lieutenant, we got three prisoners here. What would you do with them? He said, let them out. I said, we're at war. I said, two of them are general prisoners. He said, I don't care who they are. Let them out. So I let them out. We went on back to the main gate then.
Wow. Now, so for the civilian population out there, BAR is a Browning automatic rifle. So
Browning automatic rifle, yes.
So these scenes we might see in movies of a guy standing out there with just a rifle shooting at the planes, that was real life. You saw that happen, huh?
Yes, sir. Not only a rifle, they were shooting at it with a 45, too.
Now, the war became real personal for you real quick. As I understand it, when you jumped on the motorcycle to go out and find some folks, you had a personal encounter with a Japanese aircraft.
That's right. One was coming down Hangar Avenue strafing, and I seen him coming. So I knew if I stayed on my motorcycle, he was going to kill me. So I was close to a parking lot, so I laid it down and dove under a car, which I thought was a good thing at the time. But he went on by, but if he'd have seen me and hit that car, I wouldn't have been here today because I would have been gone with the gas tank exploding.
So in retrospect, maybe not such a good idea.
But I knew it wasn't a good habit. It was all over with. But at the time, I thought it was anyway to get away from him.
Okay. Well, sir, we really appreciate it. We're going to take a quick commercial break. I want to come back and have you tell us more about this. I can't tell you what an honor it is to chat with you, Duran.
Thank you, sir. I'll be right here waiting for you.
All righty. Folks, we'll be right back right here on American Warrior, a special December 7th edition.
Expect to reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigue of supporting it. Now, back to the American Warrior.
Welcome back, folks. This is your host, Ben Bueller-Garcia, special American Warrior edition. We're talking to Durward Swanson. Durward was a 20-year-old who just happened to be in Honolulu. Well, I should say just happened to be. He joined the Army Air Corps. He was in Honolulu that fateful day, December 7th, a security policeman. Before we took the break, Durward, we talked a little bit about, you know, the bombs started raining in. You guys sounded like you did pretty good. You had your muster orders. You went out and you did what you had to do. Take us back just to frame the story, sir. Now, you're at Hickam Airfield, correct?
Right, Hickam Field, right, it was.
Okay. How, relative to what, for people who haven't been to Pearl Harbor itself, my first experience going through was actually how small it is. I mean, just that area of just the island as a whole, but it's a pretty tiny area.
It's not anymore. Hickam Field has really grown. You should see it now.
Okay.
They took up part of John Rogers Airport, and the International Airport got the other part of it. And they've really expanded. They've closed down Fort Cam and done away with the big, heavy artillery 18-inch guns on the railroad cars over there. And so Hickam has really expanded.
Okay. Now, back then, in December 1941, when the bullets were still raining down a little bit, at which point did you? Well, let me just say the one thing, particularly of interest to our listeners here in Tucson, Arizona. You personally witnessed, or saw, or heard when the Arizona was hit?
I was standing at the gate. I was watching Lieutenant Welsh encounter two Zeros. He was flying a P-40 Warhawk, and he shot both of them down. And all of a sudden, here come this big mushroom cloud from the harbor. I didn't know what it was at the time, but later on I found out it was a bomb went down through the magazine section and exploded. The Arizona went down. I've got a buddy that I went to school with still entombed in it.
Now, do you have a cousin on board the Arizona as well, sir?
We thought we did, but we found out that it was the wrong one.
Okay. Okay, well, there's some good news there, I suppose.
We found out later on that he was a professor at El Paso College.
Oh, not aboard the Arizona?
No, both of them had the same name, James Edwin O'Neill.
Well, that's got to be
I thought it was my cousin, but it turned out later, Cass, my cousin, done research, we found out it wasn't him.
What a great relief. Dorward, take us through the rest of the day there. At which point in the day did the bullets stop flying? Was there an all-clear siren or order issued?
Well, it started at 7:55 and ended the way the second wave ended at 10:55. But then after that, there was one high wave of high-altitude bombers come over. They had three waves that come over Hickam Field. It was about 11:10 before everything was quiet. All the planes, Japanese planes, was gone and everything.
And what was the feel there at Hickam at that point in time? Was there an expectation that a land invasion would soon follow? Or?
Well, we thought it was, yes. But then we had we had a landing field up at Wheeler Field that Haliva, the Japs, didn't know about. So we got some pursuit planes off from there. One of them flew out, and they couldn't find any landing people landing ships and things like that. So we felt pretty secure then that we wasn't going to get none. But it was chaos. Most of the people on the island at Hickam and Pearl was anywhere from 18 to 23 years old.
Hmm.
There was nothing but a bunch of kids.
So chaos and confusion. Now, as a security policeman, it was your job to try and make some sense and bring some order to that mess, wasn't it?
We did. Yes, sir, we did.
Now, there's a really touching story, Dorward, about at the end of the day, and you and your fellow airmen were coming back, and there's a flag on a flagpole. I don't know if it was outside the barracks, or tell us about that flag.
All right. The flag was put up that morning by two of my patrolmen, Tracy Warner and Hilburn Burrs. That afternoon, after all night, it was about 9 o'clock, I said, "Stud, we ain't took this flag down yet." He said, "We'll get it in the morning." I said, "Not you. I'm going to take it down tonight. I ain't about to get my fanny court-martialed." So we went up at 9 o'clock. It was strafed all, but it was still flying. So we folded it the best we could. Then we took it over to the operation building, and I gave it to Lieutenant Colonel Boyd.
And is that flag still around?
It's still in the barracks. The bullet holes are still in the barracks. The bomb craters around the barracks. And the flag has been redone. It's still in the barracks there. Where it flew over Potsdam. It flew over the United Nations. It flew over the Air Force Academy in Washington, D.C., and then it come back to Hickam.
Wow. That's an amazing story, sir. I tell you, I've had the opportunity to visit Pearl a couple of times and go out on Ford Island, and sort of walk the ramp and look at the hangars. I spent a little bit of time at Hickam, and even as someone who's not even on this planet back in the 1940s, it gives me a chill. I can imagine what it must be like for you to be back and kind of see where you were and sort of remember what happened that day.
Well, a lot of the remembrance bring back, and I'm a very emotional guy in there. And sometimes, like this morning, we was talking about one of my buddies getting killed, and it brought a tear to my eyes. It did.
What sorts of things, and sir, you go out and speak quite a bit, talk to school children. Why?
I go to colleges and high schools, and I give them memorabilia where I speak at. And then by the end of it, if they have any questions, I try to answer the questions for them.
And why do you think that's important? We both know it's important, but tell me your feelings about how important it is for young people, particularly, to hear these stories now.
I think they should know what happened back then. I think they should know why they had the freedom they have today.
Absolutely. I think you're absolutely correct, sir. In fact, coming into the studio today, I just heard an interview saying, you know, the reason we speak English. And I thought, aha, yes, the reason we're still allowed to speak English. Now, it wasn't over for you, sir. You finally did end up getting airborne. You served as a B-17 crew chief, and then you were involved in another major battle, the Battle of Midway, or thereabouts, correct?
Right.
My plane
was shot down, the Battle of Midway. I've got six buddies still entombed about 60 miles off of Midway.
And tell us a little bit more about that story. You did the B-17, did you fly off of Midway Island, or where were you coming from?
We come from Hickam. We had 21 B-17s in the Battle of Midway.
Okay.
Major Sweeney left on the 3rd of December with six other B-17s. On the 4th of December, Captain Brooks Island, left with six other 17s. And on the 5th of June, that was all of us, 3rd, 4th, and 5th of June, we left with a group with six or more and went to Midway. On the way to Midway, our navigator spotted a heavy cruiser out to the left. He says, Captain, can we get the heavy cruiser? Captain, too. My pilot said, no. So we got to go in to Easter Island. There was two landing gears there. Easter was for the bombers. Sand Island was for the pursuit planes coming off the carriers and things like that, and refuel. So we did, and we went back, and we got to heavy cruiser. Lieutenant Basie had two direct bombs on him with a Norton bomb sight. I've heard the lieutenant say, I can bust a barrel with this bomb sight at 30,000 feet.
Well, you got him, but they got you, correct? You were shot down. You were wounded pretty badly, sir.
I like lost a leg, arm, and an eye. I stayed in the hospital almost 16 months with a pin, weights on my leg, with a pin through my ankle and knee, and braces on.
Well, sir, Mr. Swanson, I got to tell you, I've got a quote here for you. We got about a minute left. Said, people have labeled me a hero because of the attacks in the Midway battle, but I don't consider myself a hero. I consider myself a protector of America, like every soldier, sailor, airman, marine, and Coast Guardman that's serving today. Wonderful words, sir.
That's what I consider myself. I've done what we had to do. It was pushed on us, and we've done it, and we've come out victorious on it.
Well, sir, I can't tell you how proud I am to have the chance to chat with you and share your stories with our American Warrior listeners. You enjoy your time as much as you can, given the occasion there. In Hawaii, and wish you a pleasant journey back home, sir.
Thank you, and God bless the Warriors of Warrior.
God bless you, sir. Thank you for your service.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.